Welcome to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the third and final hour of tonight's holiday weekend edition of the Political Cesspool radio program, Saturday, May 23rd, Memorial Day coming up day after tomorrow, and we're coming to you live tonight from AM 1380 WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee. James Edwards with Winston Smith as my co-host tonight, and we're looking forward to another riveting hour of the cesspool this evening. We covered a lot of ground in the second hour, of course. During the first hour, Keith Alexander was in studio with me as we interviewed Edmund Connolly about movies. Of course, every hour of every show you can access online on demand 24 hours a day, 7 days a week by consulting our library of broadcast archives at thepoliticalcesspool.org. And, of course, those archives are brought to you courtesy of the Liberty News Radio Network itself. And we're most appreciative for them for that. All right, we're going to go to Maine. Man, this story we're about to cover from Maine rivals in absurdity the story. Hell, I think that story came from Maine, too. Was that from Maine, Winston, where the kid got suspended from school for, like, throwing a ham sandwich at a Muslim? Was that Maine?
I think you're right.
All right, me and Eddie laughed so hard that night when I covered that story. I mean, it was just hysterical, completely unprofessional. I mean, we were rolling on the floor. We couldn't even catch our breath. I mean, it was completely unscripted. I was just reading the story, and just as it sunk into me what I was saying, I just started laughing uncontrollably. That's not going to happen again because I've had time to reflect upon this story, but it rivals that one in terms of absurdity. But before we go to Maine, let's go first to Arkansas. We have a caller from Arkansas. All right, you're on the line in the political cesspool. How are you?
Hey, doing pretty good.
I love that accent. Winston, don't you just love that accent? Don't you feel at home?
I never tire of hearing a wonderful southern accent, especially an Arkansas accent. Arkansas and South Carolina, it does my heart so much good.
Yeah, the Mid-South, I don't know what happened in between, but Arkansas and South Carolina, they got it. All right, anyway, Brian, what's going on, my friend?
I tuned in on the internet a little late, but I caught the tail end of you talking about the movies and Disney.
Right.
And I've got a little story. I travel for a living, and I was in Monroe, Louisiana the other day, and I was in the motel room, and I just kicked back and was having me a nice little plate of ramen noodles, you know, living on a budget. And I flipped through the channels, and I found an episode of Bonanza. I said, okay, Sanctuary. And I shouldn't be corrupted by this program. And watched a few minutes of it, and the first commercial, James, that came on was a commercial by Trojan advertising I guess you call them for women?
Yeah.
And, okay. Well, it's pretty bad, you know, on national television. I'm thinking, I've never seen a commercial advertising something like this, you know, something you'd see at a fun party, you know, for the ladies.
And, I know what you're talking about.
Okay, well, anyway, the very next commercial after that was, you know, Bob. He was living large. And y'all know Bob in the Enzyme commercial. And I'm thinking, you know, there's no winning. I mean, you know, I searched the entire scope here trying to find a place where I can watch television, and they get you between the commercials, you know. I mean, you know, between the episodes on the commercials.
You know, you bring up a very astute point, Brian, because that's something we didn't even cover in our conversation of this with Edmund Connolly earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the commercials truly are just as bad as the movies or programs themselves. I can remember absolutely contrary to reality. I don't know if it was a commercial for pancakes or what, but once again, the black working man comes home to his very nice upper-class suburban home. His wife's cooking breakfast in their very clean and nicely decorated home. It's an actual family, which, you know, we know in the case there. and mm-hmm. they've got their kids, and they're sitting there waiting for their food, and, you know, it's an advertisement for Mrs. Buttersworth or whatever. I don't know what the exact brand. But, you yeah. know, exactly. I mean, you get this yeah. sort of propaganda, this unrealistic yeah. propaganda, and in cases such as you're talking about here, just nasty propaganda in
well,
between
you know,
the propaganda you're getting from the main attraction.
When I saw the first commercial I told you about, I thought, you know, the people that put this on have got the morals or some crappy addicted prostitute living under a Memphis overpass. I mean,
well,
there's just no low that they'll stoop to. You know, it's terrible. And you know, my oldest daughter, she the other day had her little newborn, or I say so, 4 month old baby in front of the Disney watching Bambi. And I told her, you know, I said, you know, that's fine now, but you really ought to try to wean him off. Y'all not even getting started on television. You ought to find another way to, you know, keep him entertained.
Yeah, no,
it's all the collateral stuff that comes with it.
Hey, Brian?
Hello?
Yeah, Brian, this is Winston. I'm proud to say that the Smith family hasn't had a television in our home for about 2 years. And when I was visiting a relative a couple of months ago, and we were watching television, and that commercial, I know which one you're talking about, but that commercial came on, and Mrs. Smith and I, our jaws hit the ground, and we said, what on earth has happened in two short years that we've been away from television? This is vulgar. This is disgusting. And there it was. James, I'll have to tell you what it is later, but I certainly can't talk about it on radio.
You haven't seen the commercial
I'm
myself.
I'm not going to give any details, but I will say this. They tried to make it as respectful as possible. It was in the setting of a library, and one of the librarians participated with a chat with two other ladies in the library. I mean, it was, you know, it wasn't a racy type commercial. If you wasn't paying attention, you'd never caught it. But anyway, that's terrible.
It was shocking. It was absolutely shocking.
Yes.
Well, thank you for the call, Brian, and thank you for punctuating the dreariness there. Even the commercials don't offer us any relief. But you make a point that's frankly obvious. And we thank you for making it on the cesspool tonight. Thank you for your support, too.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, Winston, that's what it's all about right there. That is the kind of man we want listening to this show. That's our audience, and we're damn okay. proud of it, let me tell you.
That's real people. That's salt of the earth America there. Yeah,
that's the kind
knows,
of people that made
knows,
this country what it used
knows,
to be.
He knows indecency when he sees it.
Hey, Winston, we got another caller very quickly, and we got to get to this main story. If I don't get to this, I'm going to feel so unsatisfied. Mike from Ohio, you're on the line quickly in the political cesspool.
Okay, I'll go through this really fast. Well, first off, the story about in Maine, I know what it is. I'm not going to reveal it yet. That got me laughing as well. second thing, it's funny because my wife just had she's pregnant with a set of twins, boys.
Congratulations.
And, we were thinking of naming them, since I'm a Civil War buff, naming them Nathaniel Lee and Thomas Dabney. How do you feel about that? I'm sure you can get the reference to the Civil War, the people who participated in the war. With those
well,
names.
I'll let Winston take that, but I'll tell you what, you're going to be hard-pressed to find anyone better than Dabney to name your children after. But Winston, you can't go wrong in that case, can you?
Oh, no, you can't. Dabney is one of my heroes. And, you know, I went to the college where Dabney taught, and I was pleased to eat in the house that he built there and lay flowers on his grave. You said you're going to name him Thomas Dabney?
Yes.
After Thomas Jonathan Stonewall Jackson and Robert Louis Dabney?
Yep.
Well, I'll tell you, that kid, that son already has my respect. I hope you train him to be worthy of those sacred names, because to the Southern mind, those names are sacred.
And I'll tell you.
I just read on one of my favorite websites today that somebody has put up a site of PDFs of all of Dabney's works, including his systematic theology. And I wrote back to that person that Robert Louis Dabney is one of the most precious mortal jewels that God's church has ever had. I salute you, sir, for naming, giving your son such exalted names.
You know, and that's something. when I start my family, I mean, that's something that is very important to me. I truly believe wholeheartedly in giving your children very strong names that are rooted in the heroes of our people, whether it be a boy or a girl, and there are certainly female heroes that they could take strong names after as well. But, I think that is vitally important. I echo Winston's salute in doing that. And as Winston said, they're going to have a lot to live up to. I can remember being in Virginia last year and being at the grave of Stonewall Jackson and Lee Chapel, and you absolutely get chills. We got to take a break, but thank you for the call from Ohio. We'll be back with more right after this.
Don't go away. There's more Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages. Welcome back. To get on the Political Cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
I don't want to beat a dead horse here, but I just have to say again how proud I am of the audience we have. Brian from Arkansas and Mike from Ohio, the gentleman who just called in. That's what it's about, Winston. I mean, that is the audience that we are fighting for here with this program. That is the audience that we're trying to reach to serve as their voice. And I can't tell you how proud I am that these men and men like them, and women like them too, all over the world, in fact, tune into this show because they think enough of our work to take the time to tune in. I couldn't be more proud. This is...
For a guy in Ohio to name his sons after great Southern heroes... I smile just thinking about it.
Well, to know that this is still happening, and of course it still happens. I mean, you're not going to hear about it on the local news or the national news because they want to hush up instances of, healthy demonstrations of healthy nature. But, this is the kind of audience we have, and this is the kind of audience we've been building over the course of the last 5 years, and that's what we've all been struggling for in doing this show as a volunteer effort for so long. This is what it's all about, and I am so proud of our audience.
Hey, James?
Yeah?
Just think of a day when we get a caller who calls in and says, you know, I'm going to name my son James Edwards.
Oh, man, that would be it. I would retire after that night.
I'm going to name my son Eddie the Bombardier.
That'd be a good middle name, the Bombardier. Well, maybe one day we'll be worthy of such adulation. But until then, we'll continue to cover the news. We've only got about 10 minutes left until our next guest is on, and we got to quickly get through this. Without further ado, in Maine, a Denny's restaurant, and we know how high-class Denny's is, was ordered to let a man use the women's restroom. Ordered to let the man use the women's restroom. And I'm not making this up. Apparently, in the year 2009, banning men from the women's restroom is hate. Because, as a Jew from the Maine branch of the ACU helpfully explains, whether a person is a man or a woman isn't based on their genitals. Just as we shouldn't judge people by their color of their skin, we also shouldn't judge them by the shape of their private parts. Even the newspaper calls a man who wears women's clothes a woman. Here's the story itself from Augusta, Maine. The Maine Human Rights Commission, a worthless organization if there ever was one, decided Monday that a transgendered woman was discriminated against, Winston, at a Denny's restaurant when management would not allow her to use the ladies' restroom until she had completed her sex reassignment surgery. While the lawyer representing the Denny's owners said that the 3-2 decision could... be far-reaching, could give negative far-reaching consequences for all Maine businesses with shared restroom facilities. It was hailed as a civil rights victory by the Maine Civil Liberties Union and advocacy organization Equality Maine. My God. They claim that this is a victory, that this person was discriminated against. I mean, this is a guy wanting to go into the women's bathroom. for God's sake. Here's what they said, though. It's important to know that people have rights, including transgendered people, and that businesses are not free to discriminate against them, end quote, said Zachary Hyden, the legal director for the MCLU. Hyden said that many people make the faulty assumption that being transgender is mostly about genitals. That's part of it, he said, but the essence of who they are is not what their genitals look like. The incident in question happened on October 25th, 2007, when Brianna Freeman, formerly known as Bruce Freeman, used a locked stall in the ladies' room while dressed clearly as a woman, according to the investigator's report. Obviously, a customer complained to the manager about sharing the public restroom with a man, and the customer was very upset, irate, and threatened to call the police because the management didn't want a man peeing with the women customers, the real women customers, I should say. A few days later, however, management decided that it would be in the best interest of Denny's to ask the customer, to go ahead and let the customer use whatever bathroom they wanted, lest they be assaulted by the main civil liberties union. Okay, Winston, so apparently everyone except normal white Christians have the ability to do anything and everything they want because it's discrimination to not let them do anything and everything they want. Is that basically the gist of the story here? And, I mean, how absurd could this possibly be that this be likened to a so-called civil rights infringement? I mean, this is how pathetic the left is and how perverted they are.
Well, I want to see just how far the absurdity goes. I think some folks in Maine should go in teams. They should get two groups of men. One should go to the Maine Human Rights Commission office, and one should go to the Maine Civil Liberties Union office, and those men should go into the women's restrooms and just see how far they're willing to take their human rights.
Winston, if you walked into a women's restroom in Memphis and tried to take a leak, you'd be arrested.
Well, I wouldn't do it anyhow, but you're right. Well, maybe not. Maybe the Maine Civil Liberties Union would head on down here and stick up on me. But still, Jeff, I would like to see some men go to the offices of these two organizations and just go to the women's restrooms and just see how far it would go.
I mean, this is how perverted – I mean, what a joke this country has become. I mean, what a damn sick joke. This is America? This is the country that produced people like Davy Crockett and Nathan Bedford Forrest. This is that country. Patrick Henry, Thomas Paine. This is what we've become. I mean, a country so sick and back-asswards that we think it's a crime to not let men take a leak in a woman's bathroom. And the media and all of these legal organizations are crying as if this is some sort of a heinous infringement upon their civil rights. I mean, that's just sick. I mean, this is one of those things that, if I wasn't on the air, I'd be cussing like a drunken sailor because that's how ridiculous this is, and that's how mad it makes me. I mean,
I don't know what it is about Denny's restaurants, James. I have nothing against Denny's. I've eaten there before, but, they just can't catch a break. For a while there, back in the late 80s and early 90s, Denny's restaurants were targeted by Negroes who would go into the restaurants and then claim that they were being made to wait for an inordinately long amount of time before they were seated. And they would these Negroes would sue Denny's, saying that they were racist for not seating them in a reasonable amount of time. And so finally, Denny's started installing video cameras and watching. They were recording these people being seated, and just minutes after they got in there, and yet they would still claim that Denny's was racist because they made them wait for 45 minutes, even though it was right there on videotape that they were seated almost as soon as they got in. But Denny's put up with that for a few years. It seemed like every month, just about, you heard about some belligerent black suing Denny's for racism.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, well, anytime, that's the Fred's, Fred's, the discount store here in the Mid-South, they went through the same thing. I mean, similar thing, I guess. you fire a minority that's incompetent or stealing, and then it's discrimination. Everything's discrimination. Everything is discrimination if they don't like it. And it's racist, and there's no other explanation for it, and something's got to be done about it. And the media and so-called legal organizations.
That Coach Calipari left, and my opinion is that he left because he was sick and tired of waking up every morning and turning on the radio and opening up the newspaper just to hear how big a racist he is because he's white. Because, you know, in Memphis, every white person is a racist just because you're white.
Even if Calipari never recruited one white player in his 10 years here, he was a racist. We'll be back right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody. Our second and final guest of the evening is on the line and standing by. We're going to get to Clint Lacy in just a moment, and he's going to let us know how we can take matters into our own hands and make a positive impact on our community. But before we do that, finishing out our coverage of the news this evening, right here in Memphis, after all that, we come back home. And I think this story will really give you an idea of why the political cesspool has always been and should be based in Memphis. I mean, you can't get any deeper into the sewer than this. A black shoplifter at a local Walmart right here in Memphis hurled her baby at a security guard. And here's the story. A Walmart security guard here in town confronted a black woman who was shoplifting. She responded by hurling her two-month-old nephew at the guard. When the nephew hit the ground, another woman tried to come to its rescue. So the shoplifter then picked up the kid and, in essence, reloaded and hurled it at her. She then fled in her vehicle. The kid's mom was in the restroom during the altercation. I mean, Winston, is that not Memphis, or is that not Memphis?
There you have it in a nutshell, or in a nutcase shell. What can you say? That story is its own commentary, James. It really is. It is its own commentary.
What's silly about that is that was the teaser. That story was the teaser to the 9 o'clock news one night. I just happened to be watching American Idol. And I didn't watch any of American Idol this year. I just happened to watch the very last show, the grand finale, where they coronated the winner. And I didn't even watch all of it. My wife was watching it, and I watched the last hour with her. But that story was a teaser on the news. But it wasn't the headline story. The top story of the news that night was a story called Black and White in Memphis. And it documented how this one black family wasn't allowed to rent a home from a white woman because, you know, she didn't want to rent to blacks, you know, because they're still discriminated against by God. And so I just found it a little bit ironic that on one hand you have a story like that, and on the other hand they're still playing the victim card, which, let's face it, they ain't the victims no more. Quite to the contrary.
Maybe the black family who couldn't rent the house should have thrown their children at the white woman.
Anyway,
this,
you know,
story about this woman, I mean, it's bad. She throws her sister's child. You know, she's got her sister is in the restroom. She's got her sister's child. She's shoplifting. The cop confronts her, says, "Hey, you're a thief." And so she throws this kid at the cop. And the kid hits the floor. Another woman comes to the baby's rescue. And the woman snatches the kid back and throws the kid again.
Yeah, so what's the object there? Is the object to inflict damage upon the security guard by using the baby as a weapon? Or is it just so the security guard will tend to the baby who's, like, sitting there, you know, obviously hurt at this point? I wonder what the thought process was in that case.
Her thought process did not include something like, what will my sister say if I throw her child at these people?
What
is the sister going to do? You know, the woman who threw the baby, she took off. They don't know where she is. And I know what I would do if it was my sister throwing my children around. I know exactly what I would do.
Well, you're right. I mean, the story's its own commentary. What more can we say about this except for the fact that, you know, we got to live here. You know, that in and of itself ought to be reason enough for people to contribute to this show. Have mercy on us, folks, for having to live in Memphis.
Send us money so we can buy bulletproof vests. James, I heard this story in the same newscast that had a story about a shooting right outside the door where my wife works. I mean, too, these two women were arguing at a restaurant, and one of them whips out a gun, and they go out to the parking lot, and right in front of the place where my wife works, and they start shooting.
Well, see, I mean, again, folks, once again, the political cesspool must be based from a studio in Memphis. I mean, where else is there a more prime example of what a political cesspool is and a cultural cesspool than what Memphis has become? And it's sad because this is the final resting place for people like Nathan Bedford Forrest. Memphis didn't always used to be like this. But over the course of the last 40 and 50 years, it's sure what it's become. Anyway.
There used to be that famous song, Walking in Memphis. Maybe we need to write one called Ducking in Memphis. You know?
Well, that's it. That's more like, you can't walk down. Yeah, he talks about walking in on Bill Street. You're shot dead if you do that. And if you go by Graceland, oh, my God. What an embarrassment. I mean, people from all over the world come to Memphis to go to Graceland. And we don't have the time to get into it tonight. But, I mean, all around Graceland, you can't even see inside the windows of these gas stations and mini marts and liquor stores and check cashing establishments because of the bars that have to be put on it, because it's in that type of an area. It's in a
minority
area.
That's not bars like where you go drinking. That's bars like prison bars.
Yeah, prison bars. And then there's Graceland. I mean, how embarrassing is that? Surely the tourists who come from all over the world to pay homage to the king realize, how just disgusting Memphis is now. We'll talk more about Graceland on another show. But for now, we got to get to our final guest of the evening, Clint Lacy, good friend of ours. This is a man who, I tell you, if everyone followed Clint Lacy's example, we could clean up cities like Memphis pretty quick. This is a guy who, proud Southerner, runs the Missouri Bushwhacker blog. He has written, has served, in fact, as a columnist for his local newspaper. And then in addition to all of that, in addition to coming down to Memphis and helping us defend the Confederate Parks back in 2005, in addition to all these things he does on his spare time, playing a positive role in his community when and where he can, he ran and won local office. Clint, welcome to the show.
Thank you, James.
It's great to have you for the few minutes we have left tonight. I'm glad you accepted our invitation to come on and be interviewed as a featured guest tonight. Clint, so oftentimes people say, well, what can we do? We talk a lot about the problems on this show, and I know some people see this show as perhaps negative reinforcement because we do so often focus on the problems. And let's face it, as we've said time and time again, you got to be aware of the problems before you can have the knowledge is needed to take action. But it's not all about that. There are, in fact, cases like yours, prime examples that good things can happen if you're just willing to become active. How did you win local office?
Well, this is kind of a humorous story. I remember, I don't know if you're familiar, there's a forum, online forum called the Southern War Room. I believe the website address is, it's either southernwarroom.com or southernwarroom.org. But I believe the man's name is Tommy Aaron. Anyway, we were talking politics on there one time, and I said, we should all just run for an office, even if it's dog catcher. Well, I guess it was kind of prophetic that I said dog catcher, because how I got involved in all this is my neighbor that lived behind me was a pastor, and the police show up at his door one night and give him a ticket because his dog's barking. And he says, well, wait a second, the ordinance is from 10 at night to 6 in the morning, and I always bring my dog in at 9 o'clock at night. Why am I getting a ticket? And they said, well, they changed the dog ordinance. It's 24 hours a day now.
So a dog can't bark outside at any time in that city?
Right.
Okay.
When I started doing my research, I went in and asked the chief of police, and he's a pretty good old guy. You know, he got it out for me, showed it to me, and I had him copy it for me. Well, the further I dug into this thing, it wasn't only just 24 hours, but the list was a mile long of what you could be fined for. Whining, barking, going to the bathroom outside, you know. It's just a laundry list full of, you know, pardon the pun here, crap. and then it got better than that. A maximum fine of $500 or 30 days in jail over dogs. And I thought, this ain't right. And so what I did, it started with me printing 50 flyers out. I'm a former member of the League of the South, and we had an organization at one time called the Missouri League of Southern Voters. So I just put it on our letterhead, and I only made 50 copies. Because what I found out was this happened prior to the election. Last month that two councilmen held their office. They were not running for re-election. And what this boiled down to was there was another lady that lived behind me. She was kind of into New Age stuff, I guess you could say. And the councilman that was not running for re-election.
Clint, we got to take a break. Sorry to interrupt. Hold it right there. We're going to talk more about your election. Right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We'll return. We'll return. We'll return.
Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, we are continuing and, in fact, concluding tonight's installment of the Political Cesspool with our interview with Alderman Clint Lacy. He represents Marble Hill, Missouri, on the Board of Aldermen there. And let's face it, folks, I mean, being an alderman ain't no joke. I mean, that is a nice little office. It's a local office. It's one that obviously is on the front lines of influencing local policies. And Clint is a man who sought for and won this elected office and did so as a white Southern Gentile with healthy and natural, normal, paleo-conservative beliefs. So all is not lost, particularly on the local levels. And, Clint, before we ran into that commercial break at the end of the last segment, you were giving us a little more background information on what led you to run and how, in fact, you did win.
All right. I'll try and make this a little quicker. But the gist of it was there was a lady that was, I suppose, into New Age beliefs. And one of the aldermen that represents Ward 1 lived down the road from us. And as it turns out, the way this draconian law got passed was she was running down to his house twice a week saying the dog was barking in the afternoon and she could not meditate. So before they left office, their last month of office, they shoved this thing through. They did not tell the public. It was not in the paper. And the way I found out about it was I passed my neighbor at the time, who was also a pastor, would not break a law even if he had to, gets a knock on a door and a ticket. So I pass this flyer out. I go to the meeting the day I pass the flyer out, and I only put it in three locations, 50 copies. And when I went in there, every one of those aldermen had a copy of that flyer. They did not take me seriously at first. They were pretty smug about it. They said, well, maybe you can bring some supporters with you next time. So the next time I brought five supporters. They tabled it, so to speak. So the next time we had about 10 supporters, and they said two of the aldermen had parents in the hospital. And so there was not a quorum, and they could not hold a meeting that night. And that could be the case, but it just seemed awfully suspicious at the time. So it took us 4 months to get changes to this stupid dog ordinance to protect the citizens. And one of the citizens in town saw the flyer, called me up. You know, he was with me through this whole process. And the fourth month, we walked in and filled City Hall up.
Wow.
They had to get extra seats for people, and they took us a little more seriously. And I said, look, if you want to have ordinances like a bigger city, I said, I looked at Jackson's ordinances online. They'd have a 24-hour barking ordinance, but the maximum fine's $100, the minimum fine is $10, instead of $500 and or 30 days in jail.
30 days in jail if your dog barks.
Yeah.
I mean, again, course, that's just an example of a small town having too much time on its hands, trying to make, you know, some sort of a product of,
well,
its time, I guess.
It all come down to, it really does come down to the squeaky wheel gets greased. And the new age lady was a squeaky wheel, and these aldermen that were not running for re-election shoved it through. We did get protective provisions in, like you had to have two neighbors not of the same family complain, which in all actuality made it harder to prosecute somebody than before.
Yeah, of course.
So we got that accomplished. And I decided I was going to run for office. I didn't run for office the next year because I didn't have all my ducks in a row. But the year after that, I went ahead and ran. And this was, you know, we're a very small community here, 1,500 people. But once again, I went to the copying machine, and this time I made me about 200 flyers. And I basically said I was for common sense. I was for the people. The people need to be informed. And I said my beliefs were those of a Jeffersonian Democrat. And I went on to define that. I won by six votes.
Six?
Six votes.
That's still a win.
It was still a win. I guarantee you a lot of people did not expect me to win. And it's still very hard for me to get anything done because I'm outnumbered 3-1. But I tell you what I have been able to do. There was a family, several families on one street. The previous administration, apparently when that subdivision was built, the city had made, the way I had it explained to me in the meeting, was that the city had made a deal with the developer back then that if he put the sewer lines in, the city would maintain it. Well, these people had sewer coming up in their front yards. The kids couldn't even play in their yards, and the previous administration would not do anything about it because, quote-unquote, they didn't have a record. So there's another lesson for you. If you make a deal with any kind of government entity, first of all, don't make a deal, but if you have to, get it in writing. But I was part of a new administration. Two new members, two old members, and one new mayor. And we were kind of able, I guess the new ones and the mayor, I guess you could say, was kind of able to sway things and said, hey, these people made an agreement with the city, then the burden of proof is not on them, it's on us. If there's no record, then we lost the record. So replace the sewer lines, because nobody would want to live in those conditions. So we got the sewer lines replaced. So those people were very happy. The next thing I found out was there's a good thing about being alderman. Even if I am outnumbered 3-1, I get all the information. I can relay that information to the public.
Absolutely.
And in one of my packets, I believe it was for the October meeting, September of October meeting one, I can't remember, of last year, they showed that an engineering firm had did a study on our water and sewer systems, and the rate that they recommended us hiking it to was double what people had been paying. Now, this is a very poor community, and if people are having trouble paying their water bills at the current rate or at the rate it was at, how did they expect people to pay them if they were doubled? To me, that was a reactionary response to neglect. The sewer system and the water systems should have been maintained all along and should have never gotten into this shape. I didn't win that one completely, but I was able to relay the information to the public, and once again, we packed City Hall. They did raise the rates a little bit. It was not doubled. But the way the system is set up, if a bill or ordinance is to be passed, then the majority of the aldermen have to vote for it.
Right.
So at that particular meeting, one of the aldermen did not show up. I don't know if he come across the hill and saw all the cars there and bailed, which I strongly suspect that might have had something to do with it. But anyway, since all the aldermen were not there, and that means that the three of us that were left would have to all agree on it to get this thing passed, and I said no.
So in that case, you had the veto power.
Yes.
But see, and this is what I'm talking about. I know we only have about 2 or 3 minutes left, but what I want to impress upon people with this interview, and it's been enlightening to hear about some of the inner workings of some of the issues you've tackled, but the fact that you took it upon yourself to seek public office and won with the beliefs that we share is, I think, encouraging. And people are saying, well, you know, we're being bombarded. This is a global crisis that we have. We're fighting a retreating war on all fronts right now. I mean, what good is it going to do to get elected as an alderman in some small town? Well, listen, I mean, if nothing else, we need our enclaves. And if we can, I say take over, perhaps there's a better word for it, but if we can, you know, gain power in some of these smaller communities and turn those into a reflection upon our own culture, then there's something to be said for that. I mean, we all need a home. We need a fortress. And some of these local towns can be holdouts. But they're not going to be unless we take over these city governments. And that's exactly, in this case, what you've done. And it sounds as though you've made good on your power so far.
Well,
we got about 30 seconds until the end of the program, Clint. What word, very quickly, would you like to share with folks considering becoming active in this way?
Well, first of all, you do not have to have a lot of money. For me, all it took was a computer, a printer, and my shoe soles. I went out door knocking. I want to make one point clear. Everybody that knows me knows my politics. I fly one flag in my yard, and it's a Confederate battle flag.
Amen, brother.
So they know who I am. They know what I stand for. And I would use the word reclaim. Reclaim.
Yes.
What we had, what we're supposed to have.
Clint, we're out of time, but I really appreciate the note you ended on there. Folks, the moral of the story is you too can win office. Clint Lacy did it, and he's an inspiration. Good night, everybody. God bless you. Have a happy Memorial Day.
To learn more about us or to make a donation to keep this program on the air, go to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.